this threat's not going to go away. The Russians have been at this a long time, and I fully expect they'll continue to be at it.
Do you have concerns that they might try and interfere in the U.S. midterms, which are coming up?
Of course. I have every expectation that they will continue to try and do that. But I'm confident that America will be able to have a free and fair election that will push back in a way that is sufficiently robust that the impact they have on our election won't be great.
Patriot. I want you to think about the word patriot. What comes to mind when you think about the word patriot? What comes to mind in right-wing circles, of course, are right-wingers themselves, because they're all patriots because they believe in America and the flag and hot dogs and Budweiser and all the rest. But what comes to your mind when you think of patriots? It seems to me a patriot, at least to a large degree, is somebody that would be loyal to their country. And let's say your country is under attack, right? We've got the New Englanders, we call them, you know, we've got a team, we got a football team over there. We call them the Patriots, you know? What do you think of when you think of a patriot? If the country is under attack, who is going to fight those invaders? Is it going to be the Patriots? When you think of people that serve in the military, do you think of patriots? Yeah, those are good. Those are patriots. I would say, by and large, people that decide to run for public office. Well, those who want to serve their country anyway. I would say a lot of those folks are patriots, people that do work for the country, do things that are in the best interest of the country. I would say that those are patriots. So when the word patriot is used in our media, in most media, certainly in conservative media, what gets labeled a patriot? Let's see. There's a local white supremacist group in my area called Patriot Prayer. And of course, they're just a bunch of white supremacists who've labeled themselves Patriot Prayer. It's very cute, but we know what's going on, crackers. There's a group called the Patriot Guard. So these guys are on motorcycles, and you might see them there. You know, they travel in small packs. They got gigantic flags on the back of their motorcycles. They're good. And what they do is they usually are the group that will lead the funeral procession for soldiers. I say that's pretty patriotic. And then, of course, if the Westboro Baptist Church decides to show up at a soldier's funeral and protest the freaking funeral, Patriot Guard will stand in a gigantic wall, Patriot Guard, and they will protect the family from the hate merchants in the Westboro Baptist Church. Patriots. So what's another way? What's another thing we think of when we think of patriots? Whenever I hear conservatives use the word patriots, it's always used with respect to very dangerous people. The NRA, those people are considered patriots. The folks that work at Fox News, those people are considered patriots. People that want to kill the federal government. Those people are considered patriots, KKK. And by that, I mean Chris Kobach of Kansas, KKK. Chris Kobach is seen as a patriot. The guy who's working to strip people of the right to vote, he's seen as a patriot. George W. Bush, who started two illegal wars that we're still fighting to this day with no end in sight, he's seen as a patriot. And then, of course, there's the Patriot Act, the bill that allowed for snooping and that stripped us of a lot of our rights. But they named it the Patriot Act for two reasons. One, it was drawn up after 9/11, drawn up and passed after 9/11. We now call 9/11 Patriots Day, the day that two of our towers came down. We call it Patriots Day. And, of course, the other thing is they named it the Patriot Act, so that anyone that voted against it, that would become the instant soundbite. You voted against the Patriot Act! So let me pose another question to you. Our country were under attack from, say, cyber thieves or cyber bullies or bots or Russian bots or Russian media or the Kremlin itself. How would a patriot act at that point? Would they do anything? Would a patriot just sit there and allow that attack to happen? How about another question? What if those bots, right, that Russian digital army was getting into our election system and changing votes? What if they were taking over social media, starting up fake pages, setting up rallies? We know that they did this. We know that the Russians paid to have a cage made in America. They paid an actress to be inside of that cage to act as Hillary Clinton. So that the people at this rally that the Russians put together could shout, "Lock her up!" at that cage. We know that these things happened. But now that we know that these things happened in 2016 and they're happening again in 2018, what are we going to do about it? What should we do about it? What would a patriot do about these things?
Essentially, we have not taken on the Russians yet. We're watching them intrude in our elections, spread misinformation, become more sophisticated, try to achieve strategic objectives that you have recognized, and we're just essentially sitting back and waiting.
I don't know if I would characterize it as we're sitting back and waiting, but I will say it's probably, and again, I apologize, I don't want to get into the classified here. It's probably fair to say that we have not opted to engage in some of the same behaviors that we are seeing.
Quoting here from an article over at NPR, the headline, "Russian threat to elections to persist through 2018, spy bosses warn Congress." Quoting here, Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats told the Senate Intelligence Committee that Moscow viewed its attack on the 2016 election as decidedly worthwhile given the chaos that it has sown compared with its relatively low cost. Which is to say, it didn't cost the Russians a lot of money. And they got the result that they wanted out of the election. What the Russians wanted out of that election was they wanted Republicans to run Congress. And they got that. They wanted Republicans to run a lot of state houses. And they got that. They wanted Donald Trump as president. Well, allow me to qualify that one a little bit. They did not want Hillary Clinton to be president, because she called out the corrupt system that exists inside of Russia and that is held in place by the oligarchs and by Vladimir Putin himself. And they just wanted the other person to win. But then it turns out that Trump is a useful idiot to them. Quote, "There should be no doubt that Russia perceived that its past efforts are successful and views the 2018 U.S. midterm elections as a potential target for Russian midterm operations." This according to Dan Coats. "The top intelligence officials in America were on Capitol Hill because the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence convened its annual hearing on worldwide threats. Along with Coats, we're talking to lawmakers with CIA Director Mike Pompeo, FBI Director Christopher Wray, and National Security Agency Director Admiral Mike Rogers, as well as the heads of the Defense Intelligence Agency and the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, Lieutenant General Robert Ashley and Robert Cardillo, respectively." And what we heard from this particular meeting, from this hearing, was that, yeah, the Russians are attacking again. And they're doing even more in this election than they were doing in the last election. See, when we learned that the Russians were involved in hacking in the last election, we had Obama as president. And before the election even concluded in November, making Donald Trump president, Obama was already hard at work doing all kinds of things to punish the Russians for what he clearly saw that they were doing. And that included sanctions. And right away, as soon as Obama put more sanctions on Russia, the Trump campaign got a call. "Hey, what are you going to do about these sanctions?" And they were told by Mike Flynn, "Don't worry about it. We're going to be in there soon. And there will be no sanctions."
As I understand, you said that President Trump has never ordered CyberCom to take any action to defend or thwart Russian attempts to meddle in the elections this fall. Is that correct?
So I said I've never been given any specific direction to take additional steps outside my authority. We're taking steps, but we're probably not doing enough.
Okay, so she wants to know, and I want to know, why the hell not?
Ma'am,
what's it going to take?
I believe that President Putin has clearly come to the conclusion there's little price to play here.
Bingo.
And that, therefore, I can continue this activity.
Yes.
And Trump has decided to do absolutely nothing. See, the intelligence community, they have certain powers on their own. Other powers that they get have to come from mainly two places. That's going to be Congress. So Congress can pass a law and say to the intelligence community, this is the new law. This is what we need to see done. But the other one, and the bigger one, and the more important one, would be for the president to say something and to direct them to do something. And they said, have you heard from the president at all about what we should do about this threat? See, the intelligence community can see it right now. Admiral Mike Rogers, Christopher Wray, Mike Pompeo, they can see it happening right now before their very eyes. But they are not being given the authority by one Donald Trump to do anything about it.
Have you been directed to do so, given the strategic threat that faces the United States and the significant consequences you recognize already?
No, I have not. I believe that President Putin has clearly come to the conclusion there's little price to play here.
Bingo.
And that, therefore, I can continue this activity.
Yes.
Everything, both as a director of NSA and what I see in the cyber command side, leads me to believe that if we don't change the dynamic here, this is going to continue, and 2016 won't be viewed as something isolated.
The notion they came after us brazenly, and that nobody can sit in that chair and say, we got this. The notion that you have not been given this mission to stop this from happening this year is outrageous.
The 2018 election is not just important because it's an election. It's not just important because it's a midterm election. The first nationwide election that we've had since Donald Trump became president. Whoever wins the 2018 election gets to start putting in place the infrastructure for how the maps are going to be redrawn in 2020. So yeah, the Democrats have a pretty solid chance to take back the House and the Senate and to completely rebuff this president. But this election also means that the maps can be redrawn, hopefully, and I want to be open about this, hopefully in a fair manner. I don't want the maps drawn to where they benefit Democrats. I don't want them drawn to where they benefit Republicans. I would like them drawn in a fair manner. No more of these salamander districts. I want them to look more like hexagons, because that would make a lot more sense. It is supposed to be us picking the representatives, not them picking us. And our president now effectively works for Putin and does whatever the hell Putin tells him to do. So this came out today. Some reporting over at the New York Times. Mitt Romney was Donald Trump's first choice for Secretary of State. That meeting that Trump had with Romney, where they sat down together, they took that very awkward picture. They're both awkward individuals. A lot of folks said because Romney was so against Trump during the election that was Trump making Romney grovel, right? But that's not what it was. Trump wanted Mitt Romney to be the Secretary of State. But then the Kremlin spoke up and said, no, you can't have that. You have to have our guy. And our guy is going to be Rex Tillerson. And there's nobody in the United States that is closer to the Kremlin than Rex Tillerson. He got the Medal of Friendship, which is the highest non-Russian honor, highest civilian non-Russian honor that you can get from the Kremlin. He got that because he's so tight with Putin and the Kremlin. And the Kremlin spoke up and they said, no, you cannot make that guy Secretary of State. We want our guy. And Trump did exactly what they wanted him to do.
Should RT, Sputnik, other Russian platforms be able to tweet things like hashtag crooked Hillary, as they did in 2016? My view is they shouldn't. That is a contribution to the Trump campaign, an in-kind contribution. Those are the kinds of things we can talk about. And by the way, the companies that are the platforms, they could take action and have their own rules and regulations about those things, irrespective of what Donald Trump is doing. You know, Facebook doesn't allow, for instance, on their platform to sell guns. Why can't they take actions about containing what foreign governments do during our election?
That's former Ambassador Mike McFaul pointing out some things that we could be doing. So we know that social media, with all these bots and these fake pages and all the rest, fooled not just conservatives, but also fooled progressives. And yeah, on the Facebook platform, they have decided that you can't have nudity and that you can't have gratuitous violence and that you can't sell guns on their platform. And so they could, if they really wanted to, they could say, we're not going to allow Russians to buy ads and F with our elections. And so they're trying to do some things right now, the social media side of it is. But what we really need, bigger than the social media side, is we really, really, really need the White House to do something. The White House is trying to say, because, of course, it makes Donald Trump seem not as legitimate a president. And it also makes it seem like maybe he didn't win the election on his own when he learns about this stuff. And they say there's no way it had an effect then, and there's no way that it's having an effect now. This from NBC News, the headline, Russians penetrated the U.S. voter system. This according to top U.S. Official. The U.S. official in charge of protecting American elections from hacking says the Russians successfully penetrated the voter registration rolls of several U.S. states during the 2016 presidential election. In an exclusive interview with NBC News' Jeanette Manfra, the head of cybersecurity at the Department of Homeland Security, says she couldn't talk about the classified information publicly, but in 2016, she said, we saw a targeting of 21 states and an exceptionally small number of them were actually successfully penetrated. Jay Johnson, who was DHS secretary during the Russian intrusion, said 2016 was a wake-up call. And now it's incumbent upon states and the feds to do something about it before our democracy is attacked again. But if you ask the White House, they say, because remember, Donald Trump works for Vladimir Putin. If you talk to the White House and you ask them about this, they say it had absolutely nothing to do with their victory. It didn't change anything. Nothing happened then, and nothing is happening now. And if something is happening now, well, you best believe we're being tougher than Obama was.
But Admiral Rogers is the one that would have the agency that could actually go and confront Russian intrusion at the source, and he hasn't been given the authority. In fact, he says that the Russians haven't paid a sufficient price to make them change their behavior. He's the one with the power, with the means to do it. All he needs is a presidential directive, the authority from the president.
I disagree with the premise of your question. It's not just one individual. It's looking at a number of different ways.
He's in charge of Cyber Command. Why not give him the authority?
Nobody is denying him the authority. We're looking at a number of different ways that we can put pressure. Look, this president, as I told you last week, has been much tougher on Russia than his predecessor. Let's not forget that this happened under Obama. It didn't happen under President Trump. If you want to blame somebody on past problems, then you need to look at the Obama administration.
And when it happened under Obama, Obama did something about it. And Trump has decided to do absolutely nothing about it. The Russian election hacking, it works for the United States Republican Party for a long time. And we've covered it pretty extensively on this microphone. Whether it be the voter caging, whether it be the voter ID laws, the Republicans have been trying to find a way for some time to tilt the playing field in their direction, right? To cut people off from being able to vote. And the fact that the Russians are going online now and sowing chaos, sowing discord between the people, right? During the 2016 election, telling Bernie people, you should still vote for Bernie because those dang gum Democrats took your rights away. You should still vote for Bernie. Failing at that, you should vote for Jill Stein. Failing at that, you should just stay home and watch this dog video or whatever the flip they're doing. What the Russians are doing works for the United States Republican Party. Because this is probably almost better than the voter ID laws. And the fact that the Russians are willing to hack into these state systems and start stripping people off of the voter rolls, the lower turnout is and always has favored the Republican Party. It just has. And so by going in and stripping people off the voter rolls, it's another thing that helps the Republican Party. The Republicans are completely cool with this. And let's not forget about the Republicans in Congress. It's not just President Trump. The Republicans in Congress could also do something about this. But they too have decided, you know what? This works for us. So we're just going to keep letting this happen. This tilts the playing field for the Republican Party. And that's okay. I remember after Donald Trump got the nomination and they got Paul Ryan on camera and they go, do you endorse the leader of your party? Do you endorse Donald Trump? And he just had this face and he just, no. His words were, I'm not there yet. Nope, not there yet. I mean, maybe I will, but I'm not there yet. When you see Paul Ryan and Donald Trump together now, they're completely inseparable. Smiles, ears to ear, right? And they can't get enough of each other. Because he just loves him so much now. So what changed? Donald Trump is still a racist. He's still a homophobe. He's still a bigot. He's still all these horrible, awful things. He still embraces the Klan. He's still a dummy who has maybe 20 words in his entire vocabulary. So what changed? Well, Trump and Paul Ryan seem to agree on this one gigantic idea, and that is that rich people don't have enough money and that poor people have too much money. And so now that Trump is willing to sign bills that Ryan gets passed, well, now they're best friends. Now he's brilliant. And it's completely okay that any of this is good. So the Russians. So they're okay with what the Russians are doing because it benefits them. Mind you, if it benefited the United States Democratic Party, that would be a national crisis. But because it benefits the Republicans, this is totally cool. And one of the other things that has been just stunning to me since the election is how often the Russians are in the news now. And how over at MSNBC and CNN and all these, they're having to learn about all these Russian oligarchs. And they're having to learn about Russian politics. And they're having to learn their names and all the rest. And they're having to do so because Trump is spending so much time out in the open. It's not a hidden thing anymore. He's spending so much time out in the open with the Russians.
It's just weird to see so many extraordinarily powerful Russian nationals close to the Kremlin be welcomed with open arms to Republican Party.
We've got some pictures. Let's start putting them up and tell us who some of, because some of these names are people that we've come to know. I think we've got a picture of Natalia Veselnitskaya. I've worked so hard to learn how to say her name. And
Renat Akhmetshin.
Renat Akhmetshin.
Right.
So who were they? They were Dana Rohrabacher's inauguration night ball.
Dana Rohrabacher has been called the congressman, you know, our Moscow. He's very close with folks in Putin's orbit. The fact that Renat Akhmetshin and Natalia Veselnitskaya were at his event is almost too perfect. If you wrote this in like a fiction play, people would say this goes too far because these are the two Russian nationals who were in the June 2016 Trump Tower meeting where Don Jr., Paul Manafort, and Jared Kushner talked about potentially getting dirt on Hillary Clinton. At least that's how the meeting was pitched. And now we see this odd couple pop up again celebrating Trump's inauguration.
But of course, there's no collusion. And the real problem here is not the clear collusion that Trump had with the Russians then and that Trump has with the Russians now. The real problem is that there is somebody out there investigating it.
Ah, welcome back. Great to have you, Rush Limbaugh, the cutting edge of societal evolution. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you that the special counsel, Robert Mueller, that whole investigation, because of something I read today that I consider to be blockbuster, it's by Lee Smith at tabletmag.com, and I'll be telling you about it as the program unfolds. And it not just because of this. I actually think that they're no longer investigating Russia collusion. I think the dossier has been now totally exposed for what it is, a fraudulent document that I believe now people understand that Russian agents actually wrote it.
I can't tell you how often I read Tablet magazine for their excellent, excellent journalism. And we're being told that none of this is real. There's nothing to see here. Everything is okay. There was no collusion. And wait a minute. What about all the people that are being indicted in the Russia investigation? Do people get indicted over fake dossiers? No. Do people get indicted over fake news? No. But don't believe what you're hearing with your ears and what you're seeing with your eyes. You need to believe what Donald Trump tells you, the guy who told over 2,000 verifiable lies last year. That's just the stuff that he said to the media. You get into his own life, we're probably talking 10 grand in lies, 10,000 lies. But don't believe your eyes and ears. That is unless Donald Trump is filling them with noise.
This is a president who wears his emotions on his Twitter page, and this morning he made it clear what was on his mind, the witch hunt. Go ahead and scratch another line on your cheat sheet. Today's tweet marked the 23rd time he's decried this, quote, witch hunt on Twitter, known to the rest of us as the Russia investigation. The same one that so far resulted in the indictments of 13 Russians and 3 Russian businesses, 5 guilty pleas, 3 from Trump campaign advisors, 1 who even made it to the White House, and a parade of charges against the president's former campaign chairman, including conspiracy against the United States.
But of course, none of this is real. Yes, yes, real indictments came out of a fake investigation. None of this is real. The United States, at this moment, as we speak, and by the way, get off of Facebook, as we speak, is under attack. And the man that heads the United States Republican Party, the head of the United States Republican Party, is complicit in that attack. And if you ask, and I've got this idea of Republicans, good Republicans, you know? God, there's got to be some good Republicans out there. But when I learned that 9 out of 10 Republicans approve of the job that Donald Trump is doing, it becomes really hard to make that case. This guy, Donald Trump, the man that they see as a patriot, this is how he's acting. He's standing by and just letting the attack happen.
I don't think so. My current job is I'm the dean of a graduate school of international relations. We study international trade, international business, international finance. Virtually any economist will tell you that there are no winners in trade wars. Mm. It is the ultimate non-zero-sum game. And the worst part, Kristen, is the way it bleeds over to your allies, partners, and friends and shatters relationships. What else could we possibly do to get ourselves in a war with Canada besides a move like this?
By the way, as we're on the air, and so this is how I suppose it dates the show a little bit, Gary Cohn just resigned. Gary Cohn just resigned as the top economic advisor for the president. So Trump did something with respect to this trade war that he seems to have wanted to start. Now we're into economics. This is the stuff I love. Okay. Well, we're going to do economics, but we're also going to talk about dictators, dictator Trump, dictator Putin, all the world's greatest dictators. All right, so the trade war. Donald Trump announced that we're going to have a tariff, a 25% tariff on imported steel and a 10% tariff on imported aluminum. And then he had Wilbur Ross hold up a can of Coke and say, this is 3 cents worth of metal in this thing, and it, If it raises the price of it by 10%, why, that's just a tenth of a couple of pennies. And it's a big nothing to do about nothing. And then, of course, Wilbur Ross fell asleep. Who, by the way, he gets in trouble all the time for this because he's an old-ass man who falls asleep in meetings all the time. But he's loyal to Trump. So that's really all it takes to work for this White House. I've argued for a long time for tariffs in America. And this irks certainly a lot of libertarians, a lot of Republicans. I like the idea of tariffs, but you cannot simply put a tariff on something and then that's it. See, this is where Donald Trump has absolutely zero understanding of how economics and trade work. If we make something here in America, now, make some here with American parts and with American labor, and we can get that. So let's deal with simple numbers here. Let's say we'll go with a widget. Let's say we have a widget, and that widget can be made in America for $15 and sold at roughly, you know, a 60% profit. So if it's $15, you can sell it for $26, you know, or whatever. I'm just doing quick math. Okay. Made for $15, you know, sold for $26. And let's say that same widget could be made in China for $5. And then they can sell it in our marketplace for $11. So we're talking, you know, it's over 100% if it's made for $5, you know. And they're still making a huge profit on it. But it's still less than the cost that it is to make it here. Well, in that case, I would say if we can make it here with American parts and with American labor, I understand that for most people, it's only economics. Because the case that I would make is, one, the money should stay here in America. The other case that I would make is the shipping lanes. We should not be pumping poison into the air to transport something that we can make here because it's bad for the environment. But I understand that a lot of people can't get into the whole environmental part of it. So let's just stick with the economic part of it, okay? So, yeah, it costs more to make it here. And it costs more to sell it here because, you know, we don't have slave labor. So if we can make it here and sell it here, then I think that we should do so. But the argument that's constantly made is that we need everything to be super cheap. We need everything to be super cheap. And the reason why we want things to be super cheap is so that they break. And so that we sell lots more of them. See, nothing is really made to last. We have a consumer-driven economy, and we need to keep consuming. That's how money is made. So, but I think if we can make it here, you know, and it's not going to be an astronomical cost. I think if we can make it here, we got the parts, we got the labor, then we should do so. And for certain industries, I think that we can put a tariff on them. So if it is made cheaper somewhere else, then when it comes back to America, you would put on it what's called a duty or a tariff, making it cost the same as what it would cost here in America, thereby making the default that we do is buy it and make it and buy it here in America. I like that idea, and I don't think that we need to make everything super duper cheap. But in order for something to be made in America, you need to have a couple of things. First of all, you need to have the plants to produce the stuff. And then, of course, you need to have the labor to go along with it. And that is if it still involves labor. So what are we talking about here? We're talking about steel and aluminum. So Trump said he made this argument during the election. And I remember him making it. Bernie Sanders made a similar argument. He said that we should have tariffs so that cheap stuff doesn't get dumped in our market, you know, and strip our workers and blah, 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 blah. Okay. And I get that. But we don't have as many steel plants anymore. And not just that, a lot of what goes into steel manufacturing has now been automated. So to put a tariff on these things, just a tariff, not the plants and not the workers and not the infrastructure, just the flat out tariffs. It's a half-assed idea and it's not going to work. All it's going to do, the way Donald Trump has decided to carry it out, is raise the cost of everything. And so it's thrown the markets into absolute chaos. So we have car companies here in America that produce car manufacturers that are based in other countries. So it's pretty clear that we can make cars here in America. Yeah, those factories are foreign owned, but we could, of course, do it here. See, that's the kind of thing that needs to be encouraged. But we have, in some of these laws that have been passed in recent years, we have tax breaks for people that actually move their factories out of the country. No. Let me do you one better. In the recent tax bill that just got passed by the Republican Congress and signed by this Republican president, there was even more incentives for people to move manufacturing outside of America. Did Donald Trump not read the bill? So what the hell is going on here?
That's why you see the market go down. Rarely see the market move on Trump rhetoric, because at this point, the market's like, please, I'll see you tomorrow when you actually do something. And in terms of policies, the market has liked his policies. If he does something like extraordinary tariffs here, they're not going to like it. China and Russia. What are they focused on? Spending real money on the future of business. That's artificial intelligence. When was the last time you heard the president talk about AI?
I've never heard him talk about it.
Correct. He thinks it's a steak sauce.
That's Steph Rule, who works over on MSNBC. And so that's, it's a joke, obviously, but that's a lot of the kind of talk that I've heard in the last week or so when it comes to Trump and these tariffs. He clearly has no idea what he's doing, and they've just straight turned to joking about him. Because why is he doing this? I understand this is a campaign promise, but you can't just put it on there and not have the structure behind it in order to make it work. Yes, I believe in the idea of tariffs, but it can't just be a straight tariff. There's got to be something else to accompany it, because that's not the way the economy works. You're not going to go, 25% tariff, and then all of a sudden the ground is just going to start sprouting up steel plants. That's not the way this works. So why in the hell is he doing this? Well, the most obvious answer, Occam's razor here, is the guy is just flat out dumb and has no idea what he's doing. And he didn't want to be freaking president. But I see something a little deeper here. But I think this is just one more thing that Donald Trump is doing for Putin.
The U.S. Senate voted for Russian sanctions 98-2. And the administration is basically blocked imposing those sanctions.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big, giant thing, in addition to the stuff that we've just been citing. You think about this trade war that Trump is about to enter into. If Vladimir Putin could want anything in the world, it would be the United States of America slapping tariffs on its allies that trade with it in terms of steel and aluminum, and starting a trade war among the countries of NATO. That's what you're seeing right here. Is, again, the great dream of Putin is not just that Trump's not doing anything to look into election meddling, but the big geostrategic, geoeconomic, geopolitical issues. Trump is doing exactly what Putin would want on all of them.
Yeah.
Boom. There's an election coming up in a couple of weeks. By the time this show comes out, probably about a week and a half until that election comes up. And Putin is up for another, I believe it's a 6-year term, if I'm not mistaken. Can't remember if it's 4 or 6 term. As much as I paid attention to their politics lately, I should know this. And Putin is totally expected to win. But there's a couple of things that Putin is doing right now to show how much power that he has so that he can garner the favor of the Russian people. The first thing that he's done to make sure that he wins the election is anybody that credibly ran against him, he had them either jailed or murdered. That's not hyperbole. He had them either jailed or murdered, flat out. So he's effectively running unopposed. So in the election on March 18th, it's going to go like this. You can vote for Putin or you can die. And one of the things that Putin is doing is flexing his muscle, showing what his puppet in the White House is willing to do for him. And of course, that looks good to the Russian people. And the other thing that Putin is doing is mentioning that they have missiles now. They've got missiles and our anti-missile systems are completely useless against their systems. He gave a speech recently. And in the speech, it showed he had graphics going on behind him. Now, this is all posturing for the election. He had these graphics going on behind him. And in one of those graphics, it showed bombs. It showed missiles raining down on Florida. And people said, oh my God. So we talked in the first half of the show about how there's a cyber attack against the United States right now from the Kremlin. And by the way, nothing comes out of Russia that's this big that does not have Putin's fingerprints all over it. Of course, Putin will say, I have absolutely nothing to do with that. That's not me. But it's not true. It's simply not true. Nothing this big comes out of Russia without Putin's approval.
First of all, it's a lot of boisterous kind of bellicose rhetoric that you would expect from him because, you know, he's coming up on an election, March 18th. He'll be reelected. We know what the outcome will be. But nevertheless, what he's running on is making Russia great again because the old deal that he offered to the Russian people, it was an economic deal. He's going to make their lifestyle better. He can't offer that anymore. So that's his first audience. The second one is the international policymaking community. First and foremost in Washington, but also our NATO allies. And basically Putin's saying, you know, I am strong enough to stand up to NATO, that your missile defenses won't affect me. Now, all of this is kind of irrelevant because our missile defenses are actually not aimed at Russia. Mm-hmm. They're aimed at rogue states like North Korea and Iran.
What we learned about those graphics that were going on behind Putin, including the one that showed missiles raining down on Florida. So I wake up and I've got a half a dozen news headlines in my push alerts on my phone. It's just news, 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 nerd, nerd, nerd. And I wake up and there's six of one story on the front of my phone. And I wipe the sleep out of my eyes and it's got this headline about how, you know, Russia's got these missiles and we're defenseless against them. And I threw my head back and I said, bloody hell. So, of course, I do some digging because I won't simply accept the headline. I always dig into these stories. And one of the things I learned was that these graphics that that Putin used behind him in this speech, that this election speech, this campaign speech that he gave in Russia, those were old graphics behind him. Those graphics have been posted on YouTube for something like 5 or 6 years. Now, wait a minute. You got a brand new missile system. Don't nobody know anything about. Right, you were willing to get on stage and talk about this missile system, and you're going to do this, that, and the other, and we can reach America, and they're defenseless against us. So you made you some new missiles, but you didn't make you some new graphics?
Russia means a couple of things to us. The first is that it is an adversary. It's doing awful things around the world, annexing Crimea, threatening our allies and our neighbors. It is a country that is basically a 19th century extractive oil industry economy that really doesn't contribute to the international system in any major way.
So Condoleezza Rice was on MSNBC and she was talking about this. And she says, look, this is just a lot. Of rhetoric. This is just him being loud. This doesn't really mean anything. And by the way, we've never thought of Russia as an adversary. So yeah, we don't have missile defense systems that we're putting up against them. This is just Putin. This is just the way things are.
And then the little threat about nuclear weapons was really interesting because, boy, if ever there were an empty threat, that was it. Americans should know that no one has ever believed that missile defenses were going to knock down Russia's considerable arsenal. The kinds of missile defenses that we're deploying in Eastern Europe and around the United States are to deal with onesies and twosies, like in Iran or with a North Korea. So to announce greatly that somehow now he can penetrate our missile defenses, it's just hubris and overstatement.
This kind of thing happens all the time, and it happens with Russia all the time. And this is posturing, and this is him, you know, beating his bare bald chest. It really doesn't mean anything. But the fact that Putin is able to get Donald Trump to fall in line and do the things that he wants him to do, the fact that Putin can stand up and say these things, that he wants to bomb or he's got the defense systems that he can bomb America, and there's no response from none whatsoever Trump won't criticize him at all. Trump could pass somebody on the street that looked at him sideways, and he'd be tweeting at them about how awful and stupid and low energy they are. But this guy, Putin, can threaten America, can get into our election system, right? Can set up all these social media accounts to attack our elections and to fool our people and to put ads on TV that favor him and that favor people that he wants to get elected. They can do all these things. And he won't criticize them. He won't say anything about it. He won't do anything at all. I'm not worried about Russia. I'm not worried about their bombs raining down on America. I'm not worried about them down on Florida. What I'm more concerned about, though, is the fact that we have a president that is giving this dictator everything that he wants. We have these Russian sanctions that were passed 98-2, and they have refused to implement. And that's who has to implement these. The president of the United States has to implement these, and he refuses to implement these because, hey, we're getting better results without them. No, you're not, because the leader of Russia just last week decided to get on stage and show bombs. It's an old video, fine, and show bombs raining down on Florida. It's cool. We've got things under control. Donald Trump likes to see himself as a dictator. This headline from the Washington Post, Trump's military parade would cost between $10 million and $30 million. This according to the White House budget director, Mick Mulvaney. Until it gets carried out, we don't know what it's really going to cost. But obviously, we've all heard that the Pentagon is already looking at how to carry this out. And where are those millions going to come from? Well, it's not just a matter of the logistics of getting all these tanks and all these other gigantic machines out onto the road. One of the problems with military parades is how heavy this equipment is. It's not made for the roads that we drive our cars on. And after we have this military parade, which we do not need, money that we do not need to spend, after we have this military parade in D.C., for President Small Penis, all of the roads are going to have to be repaved because all of the asphalt is going to be absolutely annihilated. And all of this so that Trump can feel like he is in charge.
What the president said yesterday in that meeting, I have to say, was very disturbing. He said a lot of disturbing things, but what he said about due process is really, frankly, amazing. It is tantamount to saying that you and I could go to jail for saying things that the president doesn't like without due process. Duterte's Philippines is a place without due process. They murder drug addicts there. Yeah. Putin's Russia is without due process.
During his speech, his State of the Union speech back in January, this from Slate.com, quoting here, Trump's speech was so deeply dangerous for an important reason. Under the cover of his soothing rhetoric about unity and bipartisanship, Trump called on Congress to give him unprecedented and unquestionably anti-democratic powers. He said, tonight, I call on Congress to empower every cabinet secretary with the authority to reward good workers and to remove federal employees who undermine the public trust or fail the American people. This is Donald Trump calling for Congress to end the rule of law. By design, it's easy to overlook the true significance of the second half of that phrase. But dwell on it for a moment and just imagine what this would actually look like in practice. Under Trump's proposal, any cabinet secretary could decide that a law enforcement official investigating the president had undermined the public trust or failed the American people and fire him on the spot. In other words, Trump is calling for an end to any semblance of independence for the IRS, the FBI, the Department of Justice, or any other agency. And now, into an open mic, Trump has called for people's guns to be taken away.
When we see somebody is sick like this guy, when the police went to see him, they didn't do a good job, but they have restrictions on what they can do. We got to give them immediate access to taking those guns away so that they don't just leave and he sit there with seven different weapons. Got to give them immediate access. Don't worry, you're not going to get any. You won't. Don't worry about the NRA. They're on our side. You guys, half of you are so afraid of the NRA. There's nothing to be afraid of.
Okay, all right. So just in case you missed it.
We got to give them immediate access to taking those guns away.
Yeah, okay. So could you imagine those words? Obama became president, and that made him a dictator. That was all it took, right? Obama becomes president. Obama's a dictator who's coming to take our guns. He never said he wanted to be a dictator. He never acted like a dictator. He never said he wanted to take anyone's guns. He never tried to take anyone's guns. But Donald Trump, for some reason, is getting away with this kind of language. If Obama had said that, impeachment would have begun 10 minutes before he said it. There's no effing way they would have. But for some reason, with this guy, with Donald Trump, it's totally cool if he says this kind of thing.
We have to keep the guns out of the hands of those that pose the threat. And this really includes background checks. We have to do something about the mentally ill not being able to buy a gun. Take the firearms first and then go to court. But take the guns first, go through due process second.
Real quick, I want to address just that mental health thing real fast. It is Donald Trump, and I've mentioned this on the air before. It is Donald Trump who made it legal for mentally ill people to get guns again.
At various points, he sounded like a Democrat. Then he sounded like someone who'd never been to the Hill before. He didn't know what bills had passed. My favorite moment was when he said, we need to stop the mentally ill people from getting guns. Andre, as you know, in February of last year, he signed a bill that did exactly the opposite, that said the NICS background checks couldn't have mental health records. So he was like, why don't we have this? We don't have it because you got rid of it. It was an amazing performance.
So we need to take the guns away. And the other thing that needs to happen, and this is another thing that Obama would have just been impeached times 10 for, is he says that we need no due process. You know, take the guns without due process, and then maybe they'll get due process.
Take the firearms first and then go to court. But take the guns first, go through due process second.
Article over at the Hill, quoting here. Donald Trump is refusing to visit the UK unless Theresa May can ensure that he is not met with protests. Bloomberg revealed that Trump complained in a phone call to May about the negative coverage he has received in the British press. He only wants flowery coverage. May told the US president that it was how the UK media operated and that she could do little to change it. She's not a dictator. Trump went on to say that he would not visit the UK unless there were guarantees that he would not be met with protests. Advisors who had been listening in on the phone call are reported to have been astonished at Trump's demands. China's parliament has opened the possibility of lifelong rule by President Xi Jinping. This is a real thing. This is happening in China right now. They want to make Xi Jinping president for life, kind of the way Russia has made Putin president for life. And kind of the way that Donald Trump expressed this weekend that he would like to be made president for life.
Don't forget, China's great, and she is a great gentleman. He's now president for life. President for life. No, he's great. He's great. Look, he was able to do that. I think it's great. May want to give that a shot someday.
I know the audio was a little bit hard to hear, but I wanted to bring you the real audio. And that was Trump pointing out that he thinks it's great that Xi Jinping gets to be president for life. And that, hey, maybe we should give that a shot over here. Donald Trump is playing pretend right now. And he's doing so in a game that is going to have some real life consequences. The fact that he refuses to criticize dictators and goes one step forward or 10 steps forward, however you want to see it, and actually praises them, loves what they do. And they say, oh, Dave Melvin, he's joking. He didn't really want to be president for life, right? Yeah, and I'm sure he doesn't. I don't think he wanted to be president to begin with. But the fact that he is cool with that idea shows that he would support a system like that. And then the Republicans refuse to criticize him, shows that they would be cool with a system like that too, just as long as the person who gets to be in charge for life is a Republican. That's the one thing. But Donald Trump is playing pretend. He's not smart. He's not clever. He's not cute. He's not going to get to be president for life. He's not going to get to be a dictator. He's being played, and he's being played by all of these people right now, and they all know how to play him. You know, Xi Jinping knows how to play him, and Putin knows how to play him, you know, and Rodrigo Duterte knows how to play him. The Republican Party knows how to play him. You know, other foreign leaders and foreign nationals and foreign companies, they all know how to manipulate him because he's so easy to manipulate. But he sees himself as this smart, strong Vladimir Putin is our president right now. And all of the things that you're seeing happen with the election and with policy and with our cybersecurity and with our State Department, everything that's happening right now, everything that this president is doing, it's every single thing that Vladimir Putin wants him to do. And I think that that's pretty clear. We'll get more into the Russia investigation next week. There's a whole bunch of stuff breaking now that's broken already. That's going to break 5 minutes after I get off this microphone. So the Mueller thing obviously can't move fast enough for some of us. But by the time Mueller swoops in and Donald Trump doesn't even get to finish out his year as president, how much damage is going to be done by then? And obviously, I don't want to say, Mueller, go faster, because we want this to be done right. But up until that point, the rest of us need to be aware of what's happening. Consider the beginning so that you can see what's happening at the end. Watch what's happening right now so that this just doesn't fly into our faces. And then we go, oh my God, how did this happen? We really are, part of Russia now. And it's not just Russia. This is just the latest bad actor that has managed to capture, American interest for conservatives, and has managed to own our president. I mean, this is just the latest one. There's lots of dictators that would love to have the kind of power that Putin has over what is supposed to be the biggest and strongest, most powerful country in the world, America. But it's not. We're weak. We fell to Donald Trump. We're giving him everything that he wants. And he is like putty in Putin's hands. And I'm pretty sure Putin is getting bored and is just about done with him. This is where you come in. You now have the information. And there's an election coming up. And most of us still have the right to vote. We don't have to accept this. We don't have to take this line down. This doesn't have to be the way that it is. But if we continue to be divided and continue to say, you know what, I don't really have an interest in politics, I don't really need to do anything, this will work. This will all work itself out. Nope, it's not. It's going to require us, all of us, not just me, not just you, all of us. What I'm doing on this microphone is to inspire. What I'm doing on this mic isn't going to change it. We have to get out there. And we have to change. We have to first recognize it, though. And then we have to get out there and change it. Because that's the only way. It's the only way we're going to be able to retain the United States of America. More next week. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on the Fiery Cap. And out, our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TFYCPO. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out There. You can also subscribe so you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, or hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at TFYCPO@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing. Kevin, I'm going to be looking for you at the embassy, waving that flag. And special thanks to you for listening. This is Melvin, signing off. Now that I've woken you up, good morning.